Welcome to the 230th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome and thank you for listening. I'd like to apologize for the audio on the last couple of podcasts. I had a little accident with my MacBook, a coffee cup and coffee, and my laptop came together, so I've had some issues with the new version of GarageBand, but I think we have it fixed today, so I hope I don't blast you out. But that's where we are, so hang in. I'll get it figured out eventually. Training is going very good for the California International Marathon, which is the second week of December. So in the ramp-up phase, trying to get a little speed work in, all as well, doing a little bit of swimming and biking still, a little bit of weight training. But for the most part, the focus is on the run and getting better running economy. So it's all good. It's my favorite sport of the three. So I'm kind of excited to be in the running mode here lately. Florida, we're getting a tropical storm. I think Nestor's on the way in this weekend. So I'm going to have to work my long run in around Nestor, but we'll be able to fit it in. Backyard garden. Tomato plants are struggling, still hot and humid here. Things don't seem to, fruit doesn't set on very well in vegetables when it's really hot and humid. I have a tower garden with these Thai peppers. They're going really good. Herb garden's going good. Everything else is just kind of in a state of bring on some rain, bring on some cooler weather. So I've actually turned my gardening more into the inside and the microgreens. So this week I have pea shoots growing, cilantro microgreens, broccoli microgreens, arugula microgreens, and sunflower microgreens going. So if you can't grow it outside, grow it inside. So far, it's a lot of fun. Like watching those grow pretty quick. Great to add to salads. You know, a little cup of those gives you the nutrient density of a whole head of something. You know, or you know, twice as much of the leafy, you know, the big leafy greens. So if you're somebody that has trouble getting your greens in and just don't like to chew as much, you know, maybe look to more microgreens into your salad, and you can mix and match and blend those in. But it's a really good way to get some extra nutrients in and just so much flavor. It's amazing how one little stalk of a microgreen it gives so much flavor to things. We did a really interesting thing in one of our nutrition classes this week, is that we did a Instant Pot jar, meal in a jar exchange. There's a cookbook out there that is called The Instant Pot Meals in a Jar Cookbook. Pamela Elgin wrote that. It is not vegan, but you know, you can make anything plant-based that you want. So we took the concept and some of the basic ideas and premises and came up with the vegan version of those recipes. So basically what it is, if you put the dried ingredients along with the spices in a mason jar and you put it on your shelf, so when you come in and you're in a hurry and you don't want to have to think about a recipe, it's kind of already there made for you. Just dump it in your Instant Pot, add water, you know, perhaps a little miso, or you know, maybe some pasta at the end, or you know, maybe a few other things if you'd like. But for the most part, you can just put the jar right into the Instant Pot and just use it as it is if you want to. So we decided as a class, thanks to the Barry family, and I'm sure they won't mind me mentioning their name, that we were going to do a Instant Pot jar meal exchange. So we picked a few of the recipes, made them plant-based, and passed Ziplocs out to everyone that wanted to participate. So everybody brought in one meal times six in the bags. And then in class today, we exchanged bags so that people could come home with six different meals that they could put in their mason jars when they got home and have them on their shelf for a rainy day. They make a great... It's a great idea, again, to have for, you know, when you don't want to take time to cook and you can just, you know, use those really quickly. People that camp can take, you know, the jars with them, put them in their Instant Pot, turn it on. You can always boil them, you know, over the stove or over a campfire as well. Some of the ingredients used dehydrated vegetables. Some of them did not. So you know, you can, you know, they can, you can mix and match and again, do what you want. So, that was a lot of fun. That smelled really good. And in class, then I made a doll, that was from that, cookbook, more or less. And, had some, red lentils and sun-dried tomatoes and some Indian spices, and we put that over kale. So that was our meal today, along with the instant pot jar recipe exchange. So that was fun. So if you have a, you know, ideas for Christmas that you want instead of a cookie exchange where everybody gets gooey cookies, then you might consider doing that. It also would be a great thing to gift to people. So if you're trying to get people into plant-based cooking, or if you buy somebody an Instant Pot, it would be a great gift to go along with it. I know a lot of people buy Instant Pots and leave them in the box on the shelf or are afraid of them because of, you know, their grandmother's pressure cooker that made all kinds of noises and everybody was afraid that it would blow up. But the, you know, the electric pressure cookers these days are very safe. I do own the Instant Pot manufactured one, and I've had it for, a couple years. We have a small one and a big one at the office, and they work really good. Make all my soups. I do all my beans and rices and grains in there. So it's a really handy gadget to have. I would recommend that as one of my plant-based starter gadgets. So, you know, number one, a sharp knife. Two would be a large stainless steel skillet, or, you know, some people can get a nonstick skillet. I prefer stainless steel. And then that Instant Pot would probably come in a close third with a good blender, Vitamix, or some sort of high-speed blender. So those are my favorite gadgets to use. A lot of people and a lot of the manufacturers are starting to add air fryers into their Instant Pots or combination things, slow cooker, fast cooker. I don't know what they all add into the air fryer. I'm not a fan. When you do an air fryer, it takes all the hydration out of something. It's cooked out of the vegetables. You can do it without oil, but a lot of people, you know, are putting goop onto things, which could add caloric density. But the main thing is you're taking vegetables and exposing them to high temperatures, and you can, you know, has the potential to release acrylamides, which are carcinogens. So I don't like getting the vegetables that high, and I don't like making them dehydrated and breaking the fiber down, because you're starting to lose a lot of nutrients. So my take on it, you know, I think 375 is about as high as I'm going to go on vegetables in the oven, potatoes. But for the most part, I try to cook at a little bit lower temperature, and I stay away from the air fryers. And, you know, I even stay away from sticking things on an outdoor grill or smoker because of the related carcinogens from heating even vegetables to high heats. I'd like to start out with a shout out to Stephanie. Last week, I asked people to email me in and tell me how old they are. So I kind of had a little bit of a idea of how old people are that listen to the podcast, and I got a nice variety. So thank you to all of those that responded. Stephanie responded, and she also asked me a question, because as most of you probably have experienced, when you're with your non-plant-based or vegan friends, they start to question you. And of course, you know, you get the usual, where do you get your protein? Where do you get your good fat? Where do you get your calcium? But Stephanie was asked a question as well. If the plant-eating animals are not exactly, you know, they grow big and strong, because we also, you know, we always say gorillas are, you know, and Clydesdales eat plants and they grow big and strong. They're not exactly like humans, so their digestive systems are different. So how can you really compare that they tolerate eating plants and are big and strong, but they don't digest things the same way? So fair enough. That was a good question. You can throw that back really quick by saying we're certainly not carnivores, because we're very much different as far as our teeth and the ability to chew. We don't have big old canines. We can't rip the fur off of something. Our stomachs are much less acidic. Our intestines are much longer than carnivores. So we know that's a difference in the digestive process. And that's why they tolerate, eating raw meat, and are better suited to eating raw meat. But just like a dog, you know, can be an omnivore, can eat my dogs like butternut squash and even spinach and kale and a variety of fruits. And, you know, they eat vegan, but obviously if I were to give them animal products, they would love and eat those as well. But I don't think it's necessary for them to have animal products. My cat is a carnivore, and he has to have meat. But my dog, again, he has bigger, both of the girls have bigger canines, and they can bite an animal and kill another animal with their teeth and eat the raw meat and do just fine, but they don't have to, because mainly they can make toluene on their own. So it's not really about so much that part as far as what animals look like as what do we do with fuel. So if you look at amino acids, they're all the same. They had to come from plants. So only plants can fix nitrogen. So when a Clydesdale eats a plant and a human eats a plant, we break it down into the same amino acids. We absorb glucose and use glucose for fuel. We take in those amino acids and convert those to protein that we need. So basically all animals do all of those things similarly. So however you get your macronutrients, it doesn't really matter if you're able to ingest them and absorb them. So we know humans are able to eat plants, and we can actually absorb all the amino acids that we need from our plant food. The proteins are all the amino acids, all the essential amino acids are there. All the essential fatty acids are there. Animals get their omega-3s and omega-6s from plants. And of course, carbohydrates are there, and we break those ultimately down into simple sugars, glucose, for absorption. And that's what ends up going into our mitochondria and our basic metabolic pathways to generate energy, or ATP. So macronutrients are broken down and absorbed, and it doesn't matter if you use a microbe in the foregut of a cow or our small intestine to absorb the macronutrients. We do with them the same exact thing. So we're able to actually process them. So that's really all that matters. If you can take the basic macronutrients and use them to make energy and to make proteins, then you're good to go. So we don't have to have animal products. I often hear people say they just want something crunchy. They miss the crunch. But they're not really missing the crunch of carrots or the crunch of apple. They're missing the crunch of something fried or oily. So people, you know, they'll say that they miss that with plant-based nutrition. Sometimes people say early on that they need something, you know, to chew, because they don't have the texture of meat that they're looking for to chew and to have to work at. But then I also laugh because those same people don't want to have to chew kale or chew cabbage that, you know, is more fibrous either. They get tired of chewing. So it's, again, back to people really, they're not looking to chew or the crunch as much as they're looking for the fat and the salt that they want to taste or they're used to tasting. So after you haven't been around that for a while, it's, you know, no big deal. That kind of goes away. But if you keep those intermittently in your diet, it doesn't go away. You still have that, you know, it's still familiar enough. But after, you know, if you give yourself 21 days or so, you know, that goes, those thoughts about chewing something or the texture of meat or the crunch of an oily something, cracker or something fried, really does go away. And while we're on that subject, I think that, you know, even when we, you know, everybody talks about, and there's various groups on Facebook, and they talk about whole foods, plant-based, and that, even that means a lot of different things to people. You know, we have you know, people talk about Dr. Esselstyn's camp, Dr. Furman's camp, Dr. McDougall's camp. You know, Dr. McDougall likes starches. Dr. Esselstyn is a greens guy and, you know, a no-no to nuts. And Dr. Furman is someplace in between both of them. And they're generalizations, for the most part, that gets people to understand the people that they're specifically treating. But then we kind of take it as like a game of telephone and twist that a little bit, you see, on Facebook groups and kind of make our own version of what's tolerable to us sometimes. And so you can take plant food, you know, broccoli, and stick a very calorie-dense nut-based cheese sauce on it and make it high fat and actually drive your cholesterol. You can eat a lot of nuts that are 80% fat and turn that into, those things can be turned into cholesterol and it will drive the fat and drive calories. And sometimes, you know, people kind of get lost in the trees when they think they're eating plant-based, especially if they're trying to lose weight. But, you know, fat has 9 calories per gram as opposed to carbohydrates 4 and protein 4 calories per gram. So you have to really watch your portion size when you're looking at something that has what we call natural fats, you know, avocados, nuts, seeds. They're going to be very calorie dense. And if you crush things, crush avocados into guacamole, crush nuts into a crust, crush nuts into a sauce, even take potatoes and make a potato sauce. You're taking or mashed potatoes. You're mashing something, so you make that something much more calorie dense. So you really have to watch when you're trying to lose weight that you're not, you know, chasing everything with this sauce and making it very calorie dense. I've seen pizzas in recipe books that, you know, have a bean sauce on top. We take those beans and crush it. So refried beans, even if they don't have fat added to them, you're still taking the bean and crushing it and you're making it much more calorie dense. Hummus is more calorie dense even without the oil than the chickpeas by themselves. So you really have to pay attention to that, and it's not all created equal. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people that when they can't get their cholesterol down, it comes down to they're just having a lot of fat in your diet. And we know that from the, you know, the Mediterranean diet type studies that those people are eating 30-35% fat, or, you know, so it's much more fat than we want to get in a daily basis. You know, we want to be someplace around 10% protein and 75% carbohydrate and 15, you know, to 20% max in the fat category. And that comes in really, really nice when you, you know, are taking into account the fat from beans, the natural fats in some foods. You get just the right amount and not an excessive amount, unless, again, you start breaking things up and blending them and you know, making a lot of dishes from, especially nuts, because they are 80% fat. So, if you have high cholesterol or you're struggling with your weight, nuts, or you're diabetic because of the fat, nuts are not your friend. So for the most part, you know, if you want to compare us to an animal, don't compare us to squirrels. Let the squirrels have the nuts. They eat just the right amount and much better than humans that keep getting things by the handfuls. I'd like to talk a little bit about cancer with regard to being overweight. It's Breast Cancer Month. And we know that people that are overweight have an increased risk of cancer. But how does all that work? There was another article that talked about endometrial cancer and metabolic syndrome. Again, multiple cancers, colon cancer, any kind of form of prostate cancer. If you're in, you know, more, if you're overweight, that's a risk factor for those cancers. But you know, how's metabolic syndrome related to these cancers? And metabolic syndrome is defined as, you know, carrying weight centrally, so more abdominal fat. Think apple versus pear shaped people. elevated cholesterol. Glucose intolerance doesn't mean necessarily full-blown diabetes. It can just be an elevated hemoglobin A1C. That's a little bit, so and a little bit of glucose elevation, and then hypertension. When you go back to the glucose elevation, you know, once there was a study done several years ago in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it looked at men, but it's, you know, it applies to women as well. If once the glucose, fasting glucose, is above 100, you start to see the timeline to full-blown diabetes markedly increases, but so does a whole host of other lifestyle diseases. So when people are told that they have borderline diabetes or glucose intolerant, when their glucose is just a little bit elevated, that's nothing to say, you know, just okay. That is a huge warning sign. That is, it's not wait till I get diabetes, but we have to do something now, because the insulin levels in the blood are elevated trying to get the glucose into the cell. When insulin levels are elevated, you also make a lot of insulin-like growth factor. So even, you know, no matter how you get the weight off, as far as there seems to be a decline in the risk of cancers. So in the study looking at endometrial cancer, even people that had bariatric surgery and lost a lot of weight, you know, the 100-pound weight loss, they had a 71% decrease in cancer. And if they could maintain it, you know, it was 81% decrease in the risk of endometrial cancer. And largely that the adipose tissue, the fat tissue, is very metabolically active. It makes leptin, it makes, you know, adiponectin, it makes inflammatory compounds, interleukin 6, tumor necrosis factor. And it also makes an aromatase, which is takes the androestrogen, which is a hormone, it's a pre-estrogen, pre-testosterone, but it turns that into estradiol, and it can bind the beta estrogen receptors in the uterus to stimulate cancer growth. There's also a decrease in sex hormone binding globulin, so that along with insulin leads to this increase in insulin growth factor, and also will stimulate an estrogen level. So even though endometrial carcinoma occurs more often in postmenopausal women, and you're like, okay, well, they're not making much estrogen, but if you're overweight or you have central obesity, then these factors are being stimulated. So you actually are getting secondary sources of estrogen besides, you know, what's left over or what's coming from the ovaries. A lot of the cytokines that are also released from the adipose tissue can even drive further insulin resistance. You know, it drives hunger. Leptin makes people, they're not become as full. So it becomes a terrible negative feedback, and that, you know, people that have high insulin levels have their appetite is stimulated. They get hungry more often. They're not getting the feedback that they're full more often. And so it becomes very, very difficult to lose weight. If you start to take a diet when you're glucose intolerant that is higher in a fat percentage, then that fat is also going to drive your glucose intolerance and going to drive the insulin levels higher, which is going to make it much more difficult to sustain the weight loss program and to keep the weight loss off. And your risk factors are going to still remain high because now, you know, your cholesterol is going to go up and perhaps even despite the weight loss. So people that are overweight have this chronic stage of, inflammation. And when you have a chronic state of inflammation, different white cell types are activated that may carry cancer cells. So you could have a small cancer one place. It helps it. You know, we know people that have more inflammation, have more metastasis even with their cancer, which ultimately, you know, can make things spread quicker. So, it's really important to address all of these risk factors for cancers. We don't think of, you know, cancer being, or high cholesterol being a risk factor for cancer. But again, the cholesterol, like the tumor cells themselves, can actually use the cholesterol in our blood to actually make more cells and make cancer cell walls. So, you know, if what we're eating is driving our cholesterol or driving our glucose intolerance, that's, you know, it's not just because it's plant-based, it's going to be okay. We have to actually look at the package that we're consuming. I also think it's much more difficult. You know, we Americans are used to big portion sizes. You know, the first thing someone says when they go to Europe is like, you know, the plates are smaller and the portion sizes are smaller. If you go out to dinner, you know, to a chain restaurant, you know, in the United States, or you see an advertisement for a chain restaurant, it's always showing these giant portion size, pick three, combination of four, you know, and it'll be potatoes and rice with butter and cream sauces and a big chunk of meat and, you know, all these different things. So if someone has trouble with, again, this insulin driving, you know, driving your appetite and the leptin driving your appetite, you're much better with a high fiber menu or a dietary options. And it becomes much more difficult to control portion size, you know, and, you know, when you have some of these conditions. So we're used to a big portion size. The appetite is already driven. And then if you get, you know, dietary items that, again, can be plant-based, you know, from Pinterest or wherever, and it's, you know, a calorie-dense crust, and then, you know, calorie-dense toppings or refried beans. I heard this week a tortilla shell that was, you know, one of the regular ones, so they have fat in them that, you know, come off of the store shelf for the most part. I don't know what the standard company is, but you know what I mean, the regular tortillas. But some people are fooled by it being a whole wheat tortilla shell. But if you look at those, sometimes those even have more fat and sugar and calories because, again, that whole wheat flour is not as sweet. It's not as pliable, so they have to have more conditioners, more additives, perhaps more fat in those to make them rollable, to make them soft. So if you just stop at whole wheat versus a white tortilla, you might really be fooled. People are really fooled when they make them a color, you know, so a spinach wrap or a sun-dried tomato wrap, you know, it's like, oh, this is great, this is healthy, but it's not much more than the color itself. It's not adding, you know, a tremendous amount, if any, nutrients. And again, in that package, you're probably getting much worse things than you're getting good from the sun-dried tomato. So you're better off with a corn masa or an oil-free tortilla than a sun-dried tomato tortilla. And then you can put your sun-dried tomatoes inside of the, you know, the low-fat one. But regardless, if you take a tortilla shell and then you put refried beans in it instead of regular beans, you're increasing the calories. So we have a flour tortilla product or whatever you want to make it out of. It's going to be calorie-dense beans. You know, you add your rice, you know, a little bit of vegetable maybe. And then I heard people put like a potato cheese sauce inside. So now you've taken potatoes and making those more dense and done that on top of things. So you can really, really get things calorie dense. But on the outside, it looks like, oh, these are great foods. I'm just having, you know, a burrito and don't forget the guacamole, you know, so you take five avocados and you smash them into, you know, a cup and you eat those. So it becomes very, very difficult for portion control in those situations and calorie control because of the density. And, you know, we always want to think the best. So we overlook a lot of how, you know, how that is. And if you're not chewing and if half of these things are already smashed, then you're not getting the feedback just from chewing. So if you can use your jaw to chew anytime you have the opportunity, that's what you should do. Because it's going to slow you down. And the fiber is going to help you to get full as opposed to things just sliding down. You know, a milkshake is going to slide down really, really easy. That's why, you know, the smoothies I'm not a huge fan of because, again, it tends to be calorie dense. You know, it's like, okay, I'll put a banana and some blueberries and I'll add my spinach. Well, maybe some peanut butter or, well, maybe some protein powder or, well, something, you know. And so now it becomes, they start becoming, oh, I'll add a few dates or maybe I'll add some nuts or maybe I'll put my hemp seeds in there. So it becomes this concoction of a very calorie dense food that the next thing you know, people, are having trouble losing weight. When it comes down to it, whether it's, you know, any of the lifestyle diseases, diabetes, coronary artery disease, cancer, you know, less is more. We're a society that we're not doing that much. We sit inside. We have office jobs. We're not doing a tremendous amount of manual labor, most of us. And so we're not burning a tremendous amount of calories, but our appetite is still such that of somebody burning a tremendous amount of calories. And even if you're going to the gym for an hour and you're sitting the rest of the day, you're still really easy to get in more calories that you need. And every time you go over the amount of energy that your body needs, it's going to store it. And when you're storing energy, depending on what kind of package that came in, you're also storing this metabolic waste. And that's really what causes us to age. So our activity level goes down as we age. Our muscle mass goes down as we age, but our appetites and our caloric intake stays the same. And so we have this start to have, you know, after childbearing years, potentially even before, the accumulation of metabolic waste because we're not keeping up. We're not burning, you know, burning the fuel. We're allowing the garbage to pile up into our cells. So if you want to save your mitochondria, exercise, earn your food, but don't turn it around and saying, I'm exercising in order to eat more. You know, it should be, you know, you're exercising to take care of the excess because there's really, you know, I don't think there's too many people out there that don't eat enough. So it's a matter of keeping up because it's really, really hard to burn off, the metabolic side effects of bad food. I saw on the Facebook today, a physician in my town posting his coronary angiogram. He was perfectly fine until a week or so ago and started to have the typical burning in his chest when he exerted himself. And it was such a surprise. He's a young, I'll say middle-aged man, still practicing. He attributed to a strong family history, which he has, but left it at that. And he was very grateful for his heart catheterization and his drug-eluting stent. So now he will be committed to taking medications to keep that stent open. And so he is now someone with heart disease. And there were actually several comments on Facebook that he should read Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease. And he actually made a reply that he knew about it. And that, he had worked at the Cleveland Clinic, yet he was not plant-based. You know, Cleveland Clinic makes most of its money from stents and bypass surgery, and they're really good at it because they do a lot. And when Dr. Esselstyn was there and he did his Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease studies, he's not there now, and that's not what they do. They still make their money from coronary artery disease and coronary artery bypass surgery. So people wonder why their doctors, aren't more passionate about nutrition and exercise. It's because doctors don't do it themselves. You know, so this is a prime example when we're going to blame our genetics on heart disease when we don't have to act upon our genetics. You know, by changing your diet, you don't have to have what your mother and father had as far as their heart disease at, 45 or 50 years of age. But you better bet that if you don't, then you will most likely get to have that. It's a shame. I hope that he takes heed from all the comments about and starts to look into plant-based nutrition. And, maybe this will be the catalyst that helps him to change his practice so that he can set the example for his patients. Not that, take your medicine and you can't do anything about it. But again, optimistic view that I'm going to be in charge and I'm going to change my diet and become plant-based and reverse my cardiovascular disease. So I really wish him well for a speedy recovery, but I hope he becomes proactive and goes on offense instead of being a defenseless a person that's a victim of their genes, because that really doesn't have to happen. It actually irritates me when celebrities say, you know, their genes and because of, you know, that they're a victim, because you really don't have to be. I don't know if any of you watched the Chicago Marathon last Sunday on TV. Probably only marathoners would watch a marathon on TV, but I was really excited to see the women's record, world record broken at 2 hours and 14 minutes. You know, those athletes are beautiful to watch. The men were running 4:44 minute miles, just like they were, you know, jogging down the street. Something that, you know, I envy and look to and would love to emulate their form and what they do gives me hope. But the other thing that gave me hope on the Chicago Marathon, there was the oldest man was 87 completing the race. I think there were 8 men and 7 women. The women were in the 70, 75 age group category. So, you know, there's no limit on who can run a marathon. It's just a matter of your desire to get out and run a marathon. At the Hawaii Ironman last week, there was a above-the-knee bilateral amputee that completed the race. He was the first above-the-knee amputee to complete the Hawaii Ironman. I mean, you know, if that guy, if you don't think that his thighs hurt those prostheses, you know, I would put money that those caused him more grief and pain than, you know, a blister on or a twisted ankle or, you know, any of the things that stop most people with two good legs. I'm sure he would take a bone-on-bone knee versus that prosthetic to run on. Because that bone-on-bone knee, if you don't have inflammation in that, you're not, you have it's a lot easier to run on that than, you know, two metal legs. So don't set your sights short. You know, I think goal setting is great. Jesse Itzler's having their, I think it's 20,029 or whatever it is that they're in Vermont at a ski lodge, and they're walking up and down to walk up the ski run to get to the number of elevation feet of Mount Everest this weekend. And people are setting goals and pushing themselves, you know, and surprising themselves to what they actually can do. And they're comparing themselves to people that have lofty goals and, you know, want to have experiences. And I think that's really what it's about. We need to stop focusing on where we're going to have our next meal or what we're going to do that's goopy and cheesy, and figure out what we're going to do for our next activity. So I would encourage you to do that, is to keep your, you know, to set a goal. You know, the next thing, I don't know if there's Halloween 5Ks out there, but there's certainly turkey trots. So if you're not signed up for a turkey trot, you know, sign up. That's you still have plenty of time to train. And even if, you know, you walk it this year and you set your walk best time, then next year it can be your run net best time. But you have to start somewhere. So get yourself signed up. You don't have to worry about taking all day to make your plant-based meal. That's another great thing about plant-based Thanksgiving, is nothing has to cook all day long. So you got plenty of time to go out and exercise. I've got my California International Marathon coming up. I think we decided tonight that we're going to join Addie. Well, we know we're going to be joining Addie Meinrich, my daughter, and our registered dietitian in Houston for Thanksgiving, and we'll be doing a turkey trot there. But then we'll have the California Marathon, and then we'll be back to Houston for a half marathon, and then to Austin for a full, Austin, Texas for a full marathon. Texas is becoming one of my new favorite states because my daughter's living there. So shout out to all you people listening in Texas. I hear only great things about people that live in Texas, and so I look forward to spending more and more time there. And then we'll be headed to Asheville to do our weekend, where we do a half marathon on one day and a whole marathon on the next day, and then out to Utah. To Zion to do the 50K in April. So we've got a full plate, And then, you know, even something on the plate for next year, as far as in November, we're doing our swim run. So we have plenty of things to keep us on track and to keep us moving and goals to set and to become faster. You know, I want to become faster and better. I'm not settling. I'm not saying, well, I'm, you know, at whatever age and I'm going to start slowing down and that's okay. I'm going to still keep trying to go faster and to get better. And in order to do that, I need to stay light. I need to do strength training. I need to keep my mitochondria up, but I need to feed myself appropriately. So I'm not exercising in order to eat more, but I'm exercising in order to make my body function better. And I'm eating to fuel my body for those endeavors, not because of those endeavors. So get out there and get moving, set something up. And again, I'd love to hear from you and give you a shout out. So hit me with an email if you want a shout out or you want to ask a question. I love them. Don't forget, get your book, Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Cookbook. I'm sorry, it's not a Jamie Delaney Plant-Based. It is a Plant-Based Wellness Cookbook. Three generations of cooking, the doctor, the dietitian, and the diva. Obviously, the dietitian and the diva aren't sitting with me here today. Just Vinny the cat, or they would be on me for leaving them out. So my apologies. Addie not only did a lot of the recipes and the nutrition, but she also did the photography. So we have pictures of the entrees, every entree that's in the cookbook, so you can see what they look like. I never want to make anything unless I think it looks good. We're also having our plant-based wellness, Charlotte County Plant-Based Wellness Nutrition Conference, March 28th, 2020. So you can get on our website at drdelaney.com and get your tickets for that. If you'd like to come for our immersion program, 7 days, full of plant-based wellness and exercise and positive motivation, we'd love to have you. We're going to cap it at 7 people this year so that we can give you private attention. And we will be giving you attention, so you need to be prepared to learn and learn science behind plant-based nutrition and different cooking techniques and ways of eating as well as exercise and all things wellness. So we look forward to that. Our conference is great breakfast and lunch that's plant-based, sugar, oil, and salt-free, cooking demo, but a lot of good speakers. Pam Popper will be there, Karen Hartglass, so get your tickets for that. And look forward to seeing you. So thank you for listening. I hope the volume is better this time. I'm still continuing to work and evolve. So hang in there with me. Share it with your friends. Love to hear some feedback from you. Have a good week.